Rangers Rambles.
We are live with the next episode of the Furry Raiders podcast. I am Jolt, chief host of the podcast. Joining me this week is Avira, co-host.
Hey everyone, what's going on? I am the co-host of the show.
Next to us, returning, Beowulf.
Jackal of all trades, master of none.
Good to have you on board once again.
Indeed, good to be back.
Next up on the panel, Douglas.
Nice to be back. Thank you for allowing me to join again.
Anytime. And rounding us out is Anubistan.
What up now?
Welcome back to the show. It's been a while. So, now that this has happened, there have been a lot of circumstances on the news cycle that's made this kind of possible, and some good, some less good, some tragic, and we'll have to start with the tragic parts. Yes. First of all, we all heard about it. Stan Lee has passed away at the age of 95.
Unfortunately. You know what? I mean, God bless him. This man really did a lot for comics and for art.
Anubistan, are you okay? All right,
who's here?
Yeah, he did, right? Like Stan basically, you know, went in there. And, yeah,
I'm kind of. It's kind of one of those things that he's one of those people that even without knowing it, I'm pretty sure he's touched every single person's life who's ever read a comic or watched a movie, certain types of movies, action movies.
He's appeared in a lot of the Spider-Man movies.
Well, he created Spider-Man.
The Iron Man movies.
He's been a character in all of his movies.
He played himself.
Yeah, he would play himself or just some old man who was a side character.
Yeah. He even in one of the movies showed up as a delivery guy.
Yeah.
I forgot what it was. Easter eggs for Stan. Like, spot the Stan. Where?
I mean, Stan Lee has created Ant-Man, Daredevil, Spider-Man, the Hulk, Fantastic Four, among many other superheroes.
X-Men.
And yeah, starting back in the 2000s, or I believe it might have been earlier, but as far as I know, like, the first time I saw him in a cameo was in the 2000s Spider-Man movies, you know, with Tobey Maguire. And he appeared in every single Marvel movie after that, every single one, just for a second. And you know, it was really nice because like I got to go to the movie theater with, you know, either my friends or my dad, and you know, we'd always like keep an eye out for the Stan Lee cameo. It was pretty cool.
He's created so many great stories for us all, characters to look up to.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's just such a tragic loss that he died.
I know. He also established the normalization of modern comic books. Basically, what that means is the way written, there are specific organizations that deal with that. And he pretty much created the rules and actually had to change the policy. Well, he was able to change the policies of the standardization of this, of how comic books are actually written. So he really had an impact on the entire world. And even future artists as well. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I don't know if you guys knew this, but he was also in the army. He originally started out repairing telephone lines and then went on to working on training films. So that's really where he got his inspiration, you know, from being in the army, working on training films. He did all kinds of things with making up slogans and, you know, cartoons. And that's sort of how he wanted to develop his own characters and get into filmography.
That would explain where Captain America came in.
Yeah, yes, it would. Yeah. you know, this guy in the army who worked with films, they kind of go hand in hand, you know, making superheroes, and that's what he did.
Indeed. And then those, like, the superheroes are basically straight up his handiwork, his legacy going forward for us, because they gave us the power to imagine, the power to, you know, to look up to these extraordinary people, and the power to fantasize about performing extraordinary feats.
Of course, yeah.
And without said imagination and so forth, where would we be? Like, we'd have...
We'd be basically a bunch of boring people. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like, there would be no Spider-Man. There would be no Hulk. There'd be no Deadpool. Daredevil. Well, Deadpool too, probably.
There'd also be no mythology also.
Yeah, no Avengers. I mean, none of that would be possible if not for Stan Lee. It's incredible.
He was the first domino that led to all of it.
Well, he created all those characters himself, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, without him, there really wouldn't even be a Marvel universe.
No, mm-hmm. No. And guys, I hate to bring this up, but I heard something on YouTube. I'm not sure if this is true or not, but there was some videos out there about how SJWs were celebrating this guy's death for
it
some reason.
It was, yes. And that
That's
was
true? Oh, God.
Wow.
The most amazing people
There's
to ever...
a line that I'm literally tempted to say, but it's from like Lord of the Rings, actually.
I mean,
the thing is, now that he's dead, they can do whatever they want with his series. That's kind of the thing. They can ruin it and do whatever they want with it.
When he was old, they already tried doing that slowly.
I mean,
now they have free reign.
Don't make any canonical sense anymore, other than.
There a thing where they tried to make Captain America gay?
It's actually Spider-Man that they wanted to make him either gay or black or gay, which I will show you and screen share this with all of you.
Didn't they try to make Captain America a girl? There,
okay, oh god. They've made his
quotations name. Problematic. Jesus.
That's insane. I mean, come on. He's just Spider-Man. It's a superhero comic.
He doesn't even show his
face
95%
of the
time.
I mean, what about the story of Mary Jane then, huh?
Spider-Man could have been just any of us.
With a mask and a costume and a lot of webs.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, he's a man with a mask. Why make a big deal out of what's behind the mask?
I just don't like the whole injection of the whole politics. I mean, it's Spider-Man. You know, he's a superhero. He saves lives. That's what.
Yes, I mean, here's the thing.
The whole idea about superheroes weren't that they just saved lives, but they were also supposed to teach right and wrong and morals too.
Yes, right. And that's exactly what Stan Lee did.
I mean, look at the old Fantastic Four comics and how the Thing would, you know, build a playground out of spare construction materials just by bending it himself.
Well, remember,
they had a whole bunch of things like that in all the old comics where the superheroes wouldn't just, you know, beat the bad guys, but they also help out with their powers.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, Stan Lee was in the military. No, he was in the army. Like, so he has these kind of, instilled values and morality, and he wanted to imbue that in his characters. And we see that, a reflection of that, in, like you said, Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and others.
All right. Here's the thing that did basically drive the SJWs thing nuts, because there is a guideline to what Spider-Man has to be, which, oh God, I can't highlight it. I'll read it. Unsurprisingly, the agreement stipulates Spidey must be male. Oh, why? Not that. Must be male, and that he doesn't torture, needlessly kill, use foul language, smoke, abuse alcohol, or have sex before the age of 16, according to copies of the emails.
And you know what? Yeah. I have no problems with that. I think that's fine.
And said more controversially, however, the agreement says Spider-Man's alter ego Peter Parker must be Caucasian and heterosexual.
And anything that doesn't fit those those qualities is just a spin-off.
Well, or a I think all of that is totally fine, even the race thing. Because think about it.
I mean, if you wanted to make an alternate Spider-Man, you can do that as long as you don't taint the original Spider-Man.
That's like if you made the Wakanda people all Asians. That wouldn't make sense, right?
No. That would not make sense.
Also, Black Panther was also created by Stan Lee, and he had a vision for their particular culture, their particular civilization. And when it comes to Peter Parker, yeah, he's just some straight white guy who got bit by a radioactive spider and got superpowers. Okay, and he's not a bad person. You know, he doesn't abuse drugs or alcohol or anything like that. And all of this, to me, makes perfect sense. So I don't understand why people are having a problem with that.
Here's the thing. Here's the funny thing, though. Stan is basically in favor of keeping Spider-Man Spider-Man, not changing anything, and says, you know, I'm okay with gay superheroes as long as they're created from the ground up.
Yeah, but don't change
it. You're not changing an entire character's backstory and lore.
No, basically,
don't do that. Just because you want, you know, oh, my fields are hurt.
Yeah, Stan is basically keeping, you know, established characters the way they are.
And another thing is one of the most horrible things that I've seen in modern day stories is when you modify a character to make, you know, gay or any of these other ideas as the primary aspect of a character's personality.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. Yeah.
Tell me about
it. I mean, whatever happened to seeing someone as an individual first?
that's funny.
That went out the window a long time ago.
Yeah, that's funny.
I know, right?
What year?
But really, what happened to it? Why was the individual thrown out? Was the individual inconvenient to
and far left leaning people into office?
Yeah, they need an enemy. That's
what kind of happened is the group became more important than the individual, so people started thinking in groups. Therefore, when people started thinking in groups, the individual became less and less important the more they thought about groups.
The more tribalism rises, the more one group is pit against the other over meaningless bullshit.
Yep, identity politics. And I think,
it goes against America with the individual first policy. Part of the country, but like one of those nations that is basically group first.
And you know what? This may be an unpopular opinion, but I'm going to say it straight up. Equality is a false god.
It is.
Well, the way that it's being preached now, it's
human beings are born with different capacities. If they are free, then they are not equal. And if they are equal, then they are not free.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I'd agree with that one, essentially. Although it is a story for another time. And in that sense, though, I'm just going to say straight up that I'm really a lot worried about Stan Lee's legacy and his creations, considering...
What's going to happen to Marvel Comics now that he's dead? Who owns it?
Yes. That's a good question. I don't know. But
is it going to be broken up? Is it going to be absorbed by DC Comics? What's going to happen?
That is really funny. I want to mention something about that. I haven't seen the movie itself, but I saw a clip from the Teen Titans Go movie where Stan Lee made a cameo appearance in that movie. I'm not going to spoil it, but basically the Teen Titans ran into him and Stan Lee said, "Oh, this is DC, not Marvel, but I still want to make a cameo appearance." And then Robin's like, "Get out of here, Stan Lee." It was just, and he actually voiced it too. It was so funny. Oh my God, it was great. It was great. So I don't know if DC is going to have any say in what he says. It was just really
funny. Marvel's already been bought by Disney now too, hasn't it? God.
Maybe.
I think so, actually. Because I was actually last week.
You guys remember the cringe that was Superhero Squad?
Huh? Oh, I don't know about that.
Look, the thing was, DC actually tipped their hat. Even DC tipped their hat to Stan Lee's passing.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
They did.
Okay, that shows that even DC has a lot more... basically, they just have a lot more courage than the SJW.
It's, yes, but...
Well, it's a respect thing.
A lot of glory, yeah. Too. Forgot that.
Other than that, though, just... Speaking of little things here, little comments.
Please. One more thing. And the mention of that Douglas Rain had died on the same day as Sam Lee. Douglas Rain was the voice of HAL 2000 from 2001 Space Odyssey.
What year was that movie?
Oh, geez, that was. That's a classic.
I don't remember, actually. I gotta check. But it's still pretty bad that he died the same day.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's even more sad? The fact that his death was overshadowed by Stan Lee. Obviously, you know, Stan Lee is a legend. But, you know...
I mean, they should both be honored, you know?
But I didn't know about this until you told me personally.
Mm-hmm.
2001 Space Odyssey was 1968. Whoa, wow. Wait, 1968?
Wow.
With that proposed graphics?
That's incredible.
Been 4 years old.
Wow. That's an old
very classic. Old. Very mm-hmm. old. Now then, just before we kind of move on, though, I mean, we all... we're going to read a little live comments. Foxler says, down with comics.
Oh, Foxler. Hey, what's up, dude?
Hey, Foxler.
Stay away. He's from trolling us, isn't he?
Play the Calvin Hobbes one.
Well, but yeah, in conclusion for this statement, we all would like to tip our hat to Stan and for everything that he's essentially given us for popular culture, for giving us the power to, you know, to imagine and a lot more.
Absolutely.
His memory live on.
Indeed. Now, the next kind of star we've lost was an old guard legend of the furry fandom and one who's been revered also in the anime community. And this is Fred Patton.
This is literally the first time I've ever heard of the dude, and I've been a fan of him since I was about, I would say, 13 to 14 years old. I was literally starting high school.
Yes, because Fred Patton tended to be like one of those little on the back end of the scene sort of person. More, he died at the age of 77. Still, but.
Yeah, well, he was sick. I mean, he had a stroke in 2010, I believe it was.
05, yeah.
But, okay, yes.
Yeah, he was 05, and until, like, 2009, he basically was still trying to keep active, even if he could only use one hand to, like, chicken peck type on a laptop. I mean, that's some dedication.
Yeah, actually, his last publication was called Exploring New Places. That was published in July of 2018. About, what, 7 months ago? 5 months ago?
Not yeah, give or take.
Yeah, but... okay, 5 months ago. Yeah, so that now he was doing this with one hand, and now he didn't. I'm not entirely sure how much influence he had on this, but I believe that was his last publication. Oh, it says so on his wiki for.
Yeah, because I collected one of those anthology stories that Fred has, and his is the type of showcasing. A lot, a series of works from dedicated furry authors on select topics,
yes.
to uplift the grade of furry literature in that sense. Because here's the passion, of reading, of literature, of things like history, and of respecting the art of writing.
Yeah, that's right.
And... I mean, he's done a lot of these. Like, I mean, he's done Dogs of War, Exploring New Worlds, The Furry Future, and even a lot of others. Yes.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, he was He's been an editor and a writer of many, many things in the furry fandom for the past 30 years. And he's really dedicated himself to doing all this. That's why he actually won that award recently. This was in, I believe it was 2011.
The furry hole. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
really cool stuff.
I mean, in that sense too, he also was a legend as well in the anime community, because all of this started when he basically, like I said, he basically managed to find anime and then started his career essentially as an adopter of the reel-to-reel videotape, recording Japanese cartoons with English subs.
Wow.
I mean, you can see how far this kind of will stretch back, though, because were it not, essentially, if it weren't for him, would we ever have as many, you know, would anime have ever gone popular in the States or in the Western community?
Well, it's hard to say. I don't know. I mean, he was definitely a major factor for that, so, yeah.
And there's just a lot of things that kind of tie together that you don't really know what would have happened if A didn't happen or B didn't happen. I mean,
right.
It's
right.
Really, it's interesting.
It is, yeah. Now, this guy Fred Patton, he started out like most of all of us did. I was watching the interview, and he said that, oh, well, I started, you know, he was born in the 1940s, and he said that he grew up on things like Animal comic books and Watership Down, and so he really got into the fandom that way, just because he liked it. And when this fandom sort of developed in the late 80s, he referred to it as the funny animal fandom, which is what it used to be called. And I just thought that was really interesting, like how he still called it that. Like, huh. It's kind of strange, right? Like, can you imagine?
It's strange, but it's cool.
It is, but like, can you imagine?
He was around that long.
Funny animals, yeah. Like, I don't know.
I mean, he's the one who basically started it anyway, didn't he?
He was one of the big founding fathers, though. But yes. Essentially, they just needed a name because there was nothing, there was no unique name for furry at the time, like in the early, in the 70s, 80s.
Yeah, well, he also mentioned that he went to science fiction conventions and kind of gathered around people with similar interests, and then he started to actually develop and organize his own events, and that's what kind of kickstarted some original conventions. In fact, he was one of the founders of Conference, the first furry convention ever.
So he wow. Was
yeah, he actually helped found it. Really cool stuff.
So yeah.
He's been around.
And for all those years, he's basically, you know, one of those a big behind the scenes public servants type.
Yeah.
Were it not, yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely done a lot. And I know I mentioned this in our chat earlier, but I just wanted to say that I think personally it's a little it's interesting that he never actually had a fursona. You know, I looked on his wiki for it, just says that he's a human. So he doesn't have his own character, and yet he's that involved in the foundation of the fandom. So I think that's really cool.
That sounds like Monster Fur or something like that. I mean, I don't think they really have a persona either, and yet they're involved.
Not to
I mean, I was in the fandom for a long time and didn't ever have a sona until, like, you know, just recently. But even then, it's more just like an avatar.
Yeah, right? I
just liked hanging out with people, you know?
I've more or less been... I consider myself a furry, and I've considered myself part of the fandom since I was like 8. So like 16, 17 years. So I kind of like... was just like went and joined in, and I'm like, this is awesome. I wish I could be this kind of stuff. And then I didn't actually get a sona until like 2011. And since then, I've been through like 5 renditions until now, which I finally got my suit of my final rendition of my character.
Oh, congrats.
Mad. Love the suit. You've seen your suit.
I've had him for freaking like 2 weeks. I was going to do a live stream, but my camera kept doing this weird glitchy thing where the screen would turn green and stuff. So,
oh, that recently you just got your fursuit?
I've had him for 2 weeks. He's been just about 2 weeks. Yeah, I got him on the 2nd, but I got to wear him for Denver last month or in August. He wasn't complete yet, but
cool. Wait, wait a minute. Am I just like messing up right now?
No, we're good. We're good.
No, because I thought maybe
random subjects. Sorry, this happens.
Yeah, we just kind of lapsed though, but it's
yeah. But it was a nice story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Like, I mean, we all started. We all started somewhere. Some point, we all found our way. Some point, but
I'm pretty sure. Like, I know of this person that. I just closed the tab, so I lost who it was.
You want to hear a funny story?
Whatever.
I actually got by hanging out with my friend from high school and watching him play TF2.
Okay.
Wow.
Until you learned he was furry.
No, he just ended up playing with a lot of people on Steam, and there happened to be furries. And I just was like, what's that?
fun, right?
Now, in regards to Fred, I think he's probably the oldest furry I've ever heard of. He died at the age of 78. So, I mean, I don't know any furries that are, you know, that old, to be honest.
There's a very select handful, at least, because there's one guy who... telephone kind of pushed into the parade, and it was an elderly gentleman who had a suit head, and but he was in a wheelchair, but he wanted to walk the final little section. Mm-hmm. So he walked the final section, which caused some problems in the parade, but
well, I mean, good for him though. I mean,
yeah, I mean, they kind of joined the parade. I mean, I don't know how old he was, but he if you're in a wheelchair, I'd assume you're, you know, more elderly.
Yeah, the
dedication there, straight up.
Yeah, there's some dedication if you're like I plan on going until my body will not let me do this kind of stuff anymore. So
that's ambitious.
That won't be too hard, especially since we're finding the cure for aging soon.
Oh, people our age won't need it for quite some time to come. But
well, yeah, we're still pretty young.
I mean, when you get
but hey, we'll at least be able to relate, you know, reverse age related diseases, yeah. But that's off topic.
But just to kind of, you know, as we're approaching this stuff, it was actually important because, you know, Fred, it was he's been stated that people should honestly, he respected anime for its art, as an art form, not for its origins.
Right.
And in the same sense, too, with furry, he really worked so hard to uplift this, you know, furry literature. That's why he went on, you know, had started the, you know, the Ursa Major Awards in that sense of, you know, that furry should have a self-contained piece of, you know, literature.
Written. Oh, he did. Absolutely. You know, Fred also was involved in, he was a publisher of over 24 literary
apologies that I've. And other little top, you know, books as well on the side of topics, like on both anime and furry.
Yes. Yeah, he really brought that to the forefront.
Furry go well together. Blame Japan.
I mean, Japanese, when you really mix them together, the results will be astounding. But alas, but I know his legacy is basically that of mostly our literature, our fandom, and giving anime to the West.
Creating the anime and the furry fandom by proxy.
Yes. And not to mention, you know, giving us all a bunch of, you know, waves to deal with.
Oh, what? Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for
a
that.
A bunch of what?
Waves.
W-E-E-B-S.
Oh. Weebs. And I was like, what?
Yeah, because but regardless though, as with all these things, we too, this is a time not of mourning but of, you know, to celebrate in much the same fashion with Stan, We here will like to honor Fred for his contributions to the fandom and shaping it for what it is today, and hope that it will carry on for the years ahead.
Yep, that's right.
So with that, it is time where we tip our hats.
Rest in peace, Fred.
Rest in peace.
Thank you for contributing all of your work.
Indeed. Now, it is time that we turn to the happier, feel-good stories of the week. Indeed. Have any of you guys managed to see the latest movie rage of that's been happening? Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
I'm so excited.
Yes. Like, there's a point when CGI reaches the point where they can do stuff like this.
Indeed. We're going to watch
where it looks semi-real. Yeah.
Yes.
They did.
Realistic shadowing.
And not to mention, like, you look at the art design of the Pokemon that have been featured thus far, and, like, and they're basically, like, 3D, like animal-like. With fur and feathers.
It looks so cool.
Textured.
I'm not one to watch boobies that often, but this is one I really want to see.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, when I first saw this, I thought that this was fake. Because I've seen something like this before. Maybe you guys have too. About a live-action Pokemon movie. That it was fan-made, somebody programmed it, and it looked really cool. But this was a couple years ago, and it was obviously a fake trailer for a fake movie. Now, when I saw this, I'm like, oh, it's just another one of those fan things.
But it's actually Warner Bros. channel.
It's real. It's actually real. I'm like, what the heck? You know, Ryan Reynolds is starring as Pikachu. I'm not really sure how I feel about that. But,
it's a little bit longer for that. Like how they did with the middle.
It looks so good.
I just made a connection here. This is Dr. Zoolittle with Pokemon.
Oh my god, yes.
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 I was going to say Eliza Thornberry.
Don't you mean Dr. Doolittle, though?
Close enough.
Or close Eliza enough.
Thornberry. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, those were good movies, too.
Oh, yeah.
Except it's got, like, an action theme thing going Dr. on instead of it just being relaxing.
Pokemon, but action theme too. It's just great.
I mean, when it comes to comparing this to other Pokemon movies, this is quite unique. You know, you look at other Pokemon movies and it's about Ash and Pikachu and they're going on their Pokemon adventure trying to, you know, win the gym battles and whatnot. But this is a completely separate story. It's like the universe is real and this is what somebody would do outside of being a Pokemon trainer. Know they become a detective and try to do an investigation. It's really
the story of what life is like for people who aren't Pokemon trainers in that world.
Yes, exactly. And can I just say how cool Charizard looks? He looks like a freaking dragon. It's so cool.
Yeah, they did a great job.
Yes, I am very, very impressed with the design features too. But at the same time, I have very mixed opinions on it too.
Look, oh, I do too.
Okay. I'm going to bring up Exhibit A.
Jigglypuff. A little vicious looking. Jigglypuff looks mad.
He fell asleep. I'm going to murder you. That's a bat face screams.
Can't help but laugh, too.
I think his face screams, "Don't call me cute, or I'll mess you up."
He's like, "Watch what I can do with a marker."
Oh.
Pokemon, the way they did it, reminds me of the famous Cheebus kid that's just waiting for you to fall asleep so they could draw something on you. Sharpie.
Also, Exhibit B, Mr. Mime.
As spooky as 2D Mr. Mime.
What else could they do with the design, though? Like, that's what he looks like. That's what it is. I can't really, I don't know.
They really did stay faithful to the adaptation of the original designs, only now with extra layers of realism and,
Yeah, they really did.
And a third dimension.
But I think he falls into
the
uncanny valley.
Yeah, I mean, there's some Pokemon you can't do anything with.
Yeah, Pikachu is one of them. Meowth is another. Like, if you screw up Pikachu, you're done.
And Ditto. Ditto's just a purple blob.
And actually, that would be hilarious. It's
jelly.
That would actually be cool to actually have a 3D Ditto and actually see it transform into other Pokemon. That would be cool.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Dude,
yeah,
all the transformationists would be all over that.
Yeah, you did instant, like, 3,000 extra people to watch the video.
Do not go there.
Dude, with Furries, have you forgotten? Anyway.
Are you kidding? That'd be so cool.
Anyway, the fact that...
I may be a furry, but there are lines.
Oh, same here.
I know. But at the end of the day, here's the thing. I was also, you know, impressed too that compared to what you see, the 3D models on those Pokemon video games and so forth.
This is like several magnitudes better.
It is. Think if you could have a VR Pokemon game.
Yes.
I mean, this looks really good, I have to say. Every Pokemon that
with
they show
this quality graphic
looks great. Like, look at how furry Pikachu is. It's so adorable.
You can see the individual strands of fur.
I know.
Hell, why not just have an augmented reality Pokemon game? Like Pokemon Go, but on like something like Google Glasses or something.
I think they might be doing that by next week. Just watch. And I'll probably do that.
Probably right. Somebody's probably going to jump on that idea.
And there's also another thing as well. It's like almost every single time there's a movie or a TV show with a cute animal, it seems to me like there's always one group of furries that just loves to jump onto the let's sexualize these cute animals bandwagon. And I see it a lot on Twitter.
Oh, sorry about that.
I know, right? Either way, you know, there's another little interesting tidbit that I did want to open up about this, what this movie did very differently compared to the mainline Pokemon shows. Pikachu's voice.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned that earlier about Ryan Reynolds being the voice of Pikachu.
Isn't that the same actor as Deadpool, but I'm not sure I remember right?
I believe so.
If I see the guy's face, yes.
But it's not like I don't know. It feels a little bit too deep. Like, hey, I'm an adult. I'm a little electric mouse. Ho-ho. I don't know. It just seems kind of weird.
I don't know, but the absurdness is like just good enough. Just good enough to not break
the...
The personality is an amazing match. That's about all you can really say. The personality is a one for one match on what you'd expect.
What about the immersion though? Like, I mean, this is basically, you know, the Pokemon speaking so the human will understand.
Yeah, but you don't know like what their actual voice is. They may sound cute and squeaky, but if you actually heard their real voice, it could be anything under the sun. That's the concept behind this.
I mean, Meowth sounds like he's from Boston or something. That's right.
Probably the actor that plays him probably is from Boston.
He just has an accent. You know?
More candy corn.
I mean, the Pokemon world already semi-mirrors the world map.
That's
it just has different names for the places.
They get their inspiration from the real world. The designers do. That's a fact.
You actually look at the shapes of the continents in the Pokemon world, and you can match it to real world continental shapes, at least closely.
We've got a lot to go with still, but
like for example, wasn't Unova based off of sort of New York looking. And that one region that had, I forget what it was called, the one with the Eternal Life machine. Does anyone have the name of that region?
Eternal Life, I don't. But the movie...
The one that has Zygarde.
The movie seems to be going in a cyberpunk kind of city-urban type of scenario.
Yeah, that sounds like many cities. Like Austin, New York, Chicago, San Fran, L.A.
I mean, yeah. If you saw on the wall of the main character in his room, he had a poster for the Sinnoh League. So we can possibly assume that this is in Sinnoh?
It's hot to say at the moment, though.
Well, but he also has a ticket to go there. Like, he has a ticket to go
that's a good
to
point,
it.
Too.
Yeah, he might just be a fan.
Like, yeah. I mean, the thing is, we're still scared. The details are still a little bit scarce at the moment.
This is only a trailer.
Teaser trailer at that.
Yeah.
I just can't believe this is actually real. You know, after all these years of seeing all these fake fan-made trailers online, now it's actually happening. This is crazy.
I think someone from Warner Brothers did what you had done online. Look at all of these fan-made trailers and called a lot of these people and decided to hire them just for making the trailers.
Yeah, well, I mean, it looks like it's going to be good. You know, it has a lot of potential. So I'm banking on that.
I mean, here's the thing, though. The only great concern I have as well is that this is what you would call a westernized anime adaptation.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, and in that regard...
What do you think it's going to be like when this movie comes to Japan? What are they going to think of it?
Well, I mean, in this regard, it kind of reminds me of what happened to Attack on Titan. They did the same kind of thing. You know, they
made a real life, live action Attack on Titan, exactly. But I never ended up seeing it.
Well, I saw the trailer for it, and it looked almost kind of similar to like the style of the whole Pokemon thing. So that's why I'm kind of wondering, like, how is this going to work out? You know?
Yeah. Whatever happened to that Attack on Titan live action movie?
I don't know. I mean, I saw the trailer for it, but I don't know what became of it.
I kept seeing a lot of trailers for it. I kept seeing a lot of progress on it, but then I never actually saw the movie itself come out.
Yeah, so like I'm saying, you know, this is pretty similar to what's happening, you know, with anime adaptations in real life using CGI, only with a Western approach to it. So it should
the
be
CGI is actually pretty good quality here.
It is. So. It is. Yeah, definitely, definitely.
As long as you know they don't blow their entire budget on making trailers, will be great.
Oh, yeah, let's hope not.
I mean, here's the thing though. This is a Western versus not a Japanese not so much a Japanese production.
I mean, Pokemon's got such a big following. I see lots of people throwing money at this and are just like, make it happen. Yeah. So
yeah,
Pokemon
yeah,
was my I'm childhood. I had the first red and blue and yellow games on like the original brick of a Game Boy.
Oh,
in black and white.
Of course. I collected cards.
My first
handheld
one was,
game, all the way to the gold. Modern game. I have owned every handheld Pokemon game, at least at one point in my life.
I actually owned a Pokemon card of Mew.
Same here. Is it the really old version or a newer version?
The holographic old version.
I got the original version, like the real sort of
old version with the
before it even had the glare or lamination or any of that. So I've been just keeping it as preserved as I can.
So
I
just
no
a random. Just a random question. What's your favorite Pokemon?
I just mentioned. Good question. All of us here, I guess. I mean, I'll get back to you on that one.
Okay.
No, just say
is Vaporeon.
Favorite Pokemon?
Yeah.
Vaporeon? That's a good one. Vaporeon. I
love Vaporeon. So cool.
I love the really cute one, so mine would be
I used to be a shiny collector in the Pokemon games. I had this one rule where I would get one shiny Pokemon per Pokemon game I had. And I think I had almost an entire box of shiny Pokemon, which I still have. But, you know, out of all of them, to pick a favorite is sort of hard.
Yeah, it's tough, right? I mean, I have a few like in my top five, but I think Porygon is number one.
Mine's a three-way draw.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Ninetales, Articuno, and Lucario.
Good choice. Wow.
Those are so good. Articuno is my favorite of the three legendary birds.
Of the legendaries, yeah, by far, Articuno's the best. Oh, yeah.
The best, absolutely.
All right, here's my favorite one. Feraligatr. You know why? Because I literally got hooked onto the gold and silver era of Pokemon, and that was literally, like, you know, the biggest time sink I have ever spent on.
Okay, what year was that?
At the turn of the millennium.
All right, cool.
I'm still stuck on this question trying to think of what is my favorite Pokemon, and I'm actually trying to think here, and I can't think of something.
Dude, we're running out of headline. But before we move on, live comments.
All right.
So let me see. All right, SDX Darker says, Mr. Mime's shoulders look like dodgeballs.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Sure.
They have the patterning of dodgeball, of the old school dodgeballs that if you got when they brought those out when you played dodgeball, you knew to duck. You didn't want to get hit with those.
Oh, yeah.
I got one. I always liked Volcarona.
Which one is that? Fifth generation.
It's the firebug one.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool choice.
Which bug? There were a lot of them. There was one that looked like an earwind.
Aww. I also liked I liked Chimecho. Chimecho was really good.
Ah, that it made the thing go flattering in the anime with James.
Because I actually have a funny story about a Chimecho. I actually was in the Safari Zone in the, you know, I think the remake of the Gold and Silver games. And I was in the Safari Zone, and you know what the worst possible thing you can encounter in the Safari Zone is? A shiny Chingling in the Safari Zone, because it can run away.
Oh, goodness. All right.
And I caught it. I was so happy. And I've had it ever since.
All right.
Transmitted through every game.
I think that'll kind of wrap up that side of the story.
All right, yeah.
So, we now have a little bit of a news roundup first.
Oh, I just wanted to mention one more live comment from Toonie, who says, Jolteon is my favorite waifu. just had to throw that in there. Okay, moving on.
Of course. All right. We now have the first of two items of news to share. Couple weds in first furry wedding in Las Vegas. In suits, no less.
I doubt it's the first. I really doubt it's the first with Las Vegas.
Nope, it is.
Possibly the first recorded one in Las Vegas.
It says that they checked.
Wasn't there a furry marriage at a con once or something?
Driving weddings in Las Vegas.
In the day.
I mean, that would have been done. There might have been, but that would be done in a different state.
In Las Vegas, given you know Las Vegas has no conventions, I could see it being a possibility.
There's one in Nevada out wide because
Reno, which is halfway across, which is literally on the opposite side of the state. But yeah,
actually, one of my friends had a furry wedding. He was on the podcast a few weeks ago, Cord Kitty. I forgot what convention this was at, but yeah, he actually had a wedding at a convention. And some people in the audience were dressed in fursuit and stuff, and it's pretty cool.
That's pretty nice.
The fact that these two...
That's what I plan to do. I mean, I would hope at one point in the future, but yeah.
Really?
Totally. I would totally do it in suit. Like, I have a pinstripe
vest. They went from Texas
just right
to Las Vegas. Oh, my God.
Yes, they did. All the way there. And their suits. Wait.
I love the video that they're like, you may now boop the bride. I was like, oh, you're gonna boop the bride. How cute. So awesome.
Like, I mean, and then just imagine too, like having this recorded and telling the news outlets as well.
I think they might have looked for the only place they could find that was like well known for weird stuff, and they hadn't had a furry wedding, and they're like, let's do it here.
Funny is that
just for some reason, I think that's possible. I think that's possible that's true.
Yeah. Well, Fox News covered this, which I thought was pretty interesting. They're typically a more conservative type of channel, and yet they're like, and this was a very fair story. They're like, yep, here it is. First furry wedding in Nevada. Okay.
The reason Fox News covered it and it was fair is you have to look up at the top and it says Fox 5, yada, 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 local. News agencies are why.
Oh, by the way, yes, you cringed at this when people in the audience were wearing pop masks.
Oh, I mentioned this before in the chat before we started. Yeah, some people in the audience, they didn't have shirts on, they were wearing like harnesses, and some people had pop masks on. And yet, Fox News did not talk about that. They said, oh, here we have a couple furries here. And I guess they probably didn't do their research and know the difference between like a pup mask and a fursuit. You know, they probably thought it was the same thing.
Probably.
And you know what? I'm okay with that.
Thought it was good, but then I noticed that and I'm like, why?
Because know it's going to happen. Because that kind of stuff happens at conventions. Come on, let's be honest. Because
it was a regular marriage, but.
Yeah, so that was interesting.
It's the most quirkiest wedding, like, literally ever. And the focus was all on, you know, the bride and groom with their suits. No surprise.
Right? They looked pretty good in their suits.
I'm pretty sure are they in full suit with their outfits?
I would assume partials.
Yeah,
with the dress and stuff.
Probably, or partials. Because there's no way on earth that you're wearing a wedding dress with a fursuit on.
With a full suit on, the bodysuit. No, I would.
Yeah, that. I don't know if you would be dumb enough to do that or brave enough. I wouldn't want to do that at all.
If you're going to do it,
Las Vegas.
Why not do that in Alaska outside?
Full suits aren't that bad.
No, but I'm getting.
I've heard from fur suiters, the full fur suiters, it's hot as hell.
It is. I am one.
In the desert temperatures, it's worse.
I am a fur suiter, and it is.
I have it worse than you, mister. Don't yap at me.
As long as you're moving, it's fine. It's when you stand still you have a problem. Either way.
Yeah.
We should go on to the next topic.
Now, the next story, the last one of the day, is this little funny one, which has got people up in a tizzy.
Yes.
Young people offended by Hasbro's monopoly for millennials.
Oh? You mean
basically? No, they basically remove the ability to buy any of the properties, and instead it's like, go get experiences.
What?
Yeah, okay,
forget real estate. It is
legitimately, like, on the front of the box, it says, forget properties. You can't afford it.
What?
I'm holding up.
That's a burn.
Legitimately. It was intended to trigger them. It was literally their entire goal. I'm certain of it was to trigger millennials, and it worked fantastically.
Like
that is spectacular.
That's yes.
That is what I would call dedication to your job.
Yeah, just look at the cover.
Why can't Sony do that? And by Sony, I mean Sony.
Because becoming cucked is easier.
Yeah, fuck off. This is my response to that.
That's crazy.
You know, yeah, I mean, look at just look at all these little references. I mean, of a class. This is like the stuff millennials love. Participation awards. Fancy
quality. Like, legitimately, I think one of them was like, go to a vegan restaurant or something. It's like, what, these stupid things that it was just like. Millennial the entire game is millennial stereotypes, and it's fantastic. Like, I want to buy one of these. Where can I buy this?
Instead of going to jail,
I think I could actually go to Walmart and see that and buy it for Christmas. And then
I want an autographed one from the maker of this. Who thought this up?
I want all of your autographs, so
I can vacuum seal this and keep it forever and show everyone.
I want that board game myself too, mister.
Yeah, same here. Where the hell is the person that's going to give me the autograph for crying out loud?
Just seal the game in resin after it's been signed. It's perfect.
That's great. That's so awesome.
Monopoly.
Now, and speaking of games that are meant to trigger people, they actually have messed up versions of the game of life.
Yeah. Right there. Let's play game of Millennial Monopoly. The rules are simple. You start with no money. You can't afford anything. The board is on fire for some reason, and everything is your fault. Oh, my God.
This thing is
amazing.
For days.
Whoever came up with that, I want to high five them.
Yeah,
get a hug from them.
That came up with this is like a rating. Like, I give them a freaking S rating for effort. Like, superstar levels of effort.
I'd give them an A++++ for pissing off every single wanker down the street.
Dude, can I just say this? Like, I make no secret that I am basically aged as a millennial, but I love it.
Oh, same here.
I rate that out of not out of 10.
Because it's so freaking blunt and true.
Yeah,
it is. Not
out of 10. Math joke.
So fantastic.
I know, like... This is just the story of a freaking lifetime.
And someone's finally got the balls to tell people just how it is in a way that would work, which are games. And what do you think millennials like? They like to play games.
So true.
So great. Like, this had to be thought of for a long time, and they're like, all right, what's the biggest middle finger we can give to everyone from this generation? Let's make a game about how all of their stereotypes are.
Oh my gosh.
And there's some people who love the idea, and there's other people who don't.
And, you know, laminate, seal it, and get it signed. Please take a picture.
Oh, if I get an autograph of it, I'm going to basically do that, and then basically have both of my middle fingers up with the words.
You know, I think
millennial generation.
We started looking for Hasbro's panels at your local Comic-Con or Anime-Con.
Then wasn't there another tweet on that article right under it about how I hope the proceeds to this go to students in college debt?
Because that's why they can't afford anything. Yeah.
And
the person who says that college has a blue check mark. What do you know? Socialism!
But really, college is a scam.
It really
Anything
is.
That you could get from college, you could get for free or through internships at, you know, businesses. Yeah. Or actual trade schools.
Hey.
My cousin went to college and she's struggling to get a job.
For a safe space. All right.
Well, you know what everyone has forgot about? Farming is a
thing. Yeah.
Of what? I heard farmism.
Legitimately, you can go to you can get a 4-year college degree on how to farm.
Growing food. good luck.
I mean,
I know how to grow food. I've done it before.
You almost need a college degree to run some of the modern farm machinery with all the freaking computers and everything in them.
Yep.
Well, not really.
The millennial.
Hydroponics and that shit's easy.
Oh, yeah. There are people that don't even have a college degree, and guess what? They're smart enough to do hydroponics. It's like, what the hell? Did you get a degree in college? I'm like, nope. They're just smart enough to do it.
College is a scam. It really is.
And yet, you know, millennials are still buying it up lots and lots, and this board game just
basically... spending like a $250,000 on, you know, inside the human mind, your thoughts and you, or some nonsense.
You could literally get everything that college education offers for free off of the internet.
Yeah. Except,
or you
could literally
you
learn get, you know,
from your local people, honestly.
You have to realize that they want to be babied. They want to keep the world from harming them, so they're willing to pay huge amounts of money to, you know, have their feelings held in contempt or make themselves feel good.
Yeah, I basically warned one of my younger cousins, who actually is in college right now, before she even started. You're going to be dealing with people that are in safe spaces that are going to be wanting to be babied.
Yeah, that's true.
Told a few of my friends who are now going to be starting college the exact same thing a few years before they even graduated high school.
If I was in like college or something, I wouldn't want to be. But if there was a safe space room, I would want to kick open that door every single day as hard as I could, just for the
and
hope that I get to break the door.
Here's something for me.
I would want to break the door, and then when the college would ask, why'd you break the door? And I'd say, doors offend me.
All right.
I only had two places that I actually did consider my safe space. Basically, like my bedroom, of course, because that happens to be where I am a lot. And the library, where I can basically surround myself in the knowledge, which a lot of these kids do not apparently like.
All right. We're gonna wrap this up a little bit. There's some good man. I know. We've got
someone's door going off.
That's my clock.
No, that's him. That's his clock telling him that it is time for us to end.
Pretty much.
Okay, because I thought that was someone's doorbell.
No, my mic picked it super sensitive enough to pick that up. Either way, live comments. Chris the Lava says, they need to make a Clue version where Starbucks cup, man bun, and Antifa flag are weapons. I'm thinking, like, maybe we could use those as, like, those little, you know, those little players.
They actually might if Hasbro gets pushed long enough and the sales go up. They might do it.
Totally, basically play like a freaking a socialist sim Monopoly with an Antifa thingo as my you know 3D character on the board. Dude, yeah.
How would that even work? A socialist Monopoly, like that'd be the weirdest game ever.
Mind blown.
You go and you land on like a property, and you take someone's money and then you give it back to everyone else.
That's basically socialism right there.
And if you land on jail, you just like automatically go and you collect $200 and you don't have to go to jail.
Oh my God.
And that's socialism.
Jeez.
Anyway, I believe that's pretty much it though. Just as I probably won't say a little bit of, you know, a little. Get everyone to close up because we're basically it's both a mixture of somber and happiness. But in general, though, I just straight up would like to say, honor the forefathers of those that gave you the culture you're in, whether it be in comics, anime, or in furry. We respect them,
or in general too.
Indeed, and
you know, like I basically found now where my ancestors were from. So anyone from the UK. Might actually be related to you.
Anyway, though, I believe that's that's all the time we have. Thank you. Thanks to those who are listening. I hope you had fun as we did with production of the show. And don't forget as well, I can clearly say that we have been going through a large recruitment wave of sorts. And those of you who are new to listening, you can find the show also on Podbean, iTunes, Google Play Store, and Stitcher, where you can take it with you on the go for comfortable listening. And that is it. This is us signing off. Until next time, farewell.
Bye.
Au revoir. Farewell.